sir.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Bernard?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me clearly?
Yes.
Well, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Can you state your full name? Or maybe see number for the record?
My name is Isaac Bernard. My DOT number is 77816.
Thank you, sir. You are appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31-412B hearing to consider parole to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing today. You can see on the video conference screen, I'll begin with the opposite side from me working toward me. We have the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. At the center of the bench, we have our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.G. Wright. Next to me is the Honorable David Neal, and my name is Luis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel lead for your hearing. I would like to begin the hearing with the following summary. Again, Mr. Bernal, can you hear me clearly?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Mr. Jaime Bernal is 48 years old. He's currently serving a 28-year sentence for an attempt to commit murder in the first degree with a sentence end date of July 28, 2020. He has a pending 20-year consecutive sentence also for attempt to commit murder in the first degree. And according to Ames, there is an active sentence running concurrent for promoting prison contraband. And I will stop right now. Mr. Bernal, are you serving that sentence right now?
No, that's been expired years ago.
Okay, the reason why I bring that up is because it looks expired if you look at the dates. But it says active in age, so I'm certainly not trying to create concerns for you. It does look like it expired. It does look like it expired, but it's stated as active. So I'm just accounting for that in terms of reading the summary. I will continue. The incident offense occurred on or about July 30th, 1992. He was approximately 21 years old at the time of crime. He was convicted by jury trial on June 8, 1993 and sentenced on July 8, 1993. He appealed his case, which was affirmed on October 27, 1994. Mr. Bernal has an extensive criminal history, which includes previous convictions for shoplifting, burglary, larceny, and a probation violation. It should be noted that the incident offense represented an escalation in violent behavior. I will read a brief summary of the offense in question, but you'll be given an opportunity later in the hearing to explain the incident offense. But in short, and this is a summary provided by the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. Mr. Bernal opened fire on two police officers as they exited or attempted to exit their patrol car. Officer Logan, again, enforcement officer, was hit twice, once under the chin and once in the shoulder. As a result of Mr. Bernal's actions, Officer Logan suffered a serious spinal injury, which resulted in functionality issues from neck down and numbness to the rest of the body. According to the pre-sentence report, Officer Logan's family, we'll just say, suffered considerable trauma. It affected his relationship with his children, etc. We'll get into more of this when the victims are given an opportunity to speak. It should be noted that Officer Logan was wearing a gang enforcement shirt at the time of the shooting, and that Mr. Bernal was affiliated with 9th Street, a criminal gang in Phoenix. And again, we'll get into the specifics of the case as we continue. Mr. Bernal has completed considerable programming in the Arizona Department of Corrections. This hearing is to consider parole to his next sentence, but he submitted a release plan which includes support from his family and work at what appears to be a family-owned business. He has an extensive history of discipline in the Department of Corrections from 1994 through 2018, with his last major ticket on December 11, 2017, for positive oral refusal to UA. This appears to be his 13th hearing before the board. It did not seem that he had any letters of support in his parole packet. I will ask right now, do we have any supporters for Mr. Bernal in the room? Okay, so Mr. Bernal, you do have some supporters in the room. We do have a letter dated April 9th, 2019 from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office opposing parole. Mr. Bernal, this is another opportunity for the board to get to know you. Can you tell us in your own words about the crimes that led to incarceration and why you think you should be considered for parole to your next consecutive sentence? Thank you, sir.
Mr. Pignolian? That's who I'm speaking to, right, Mr. Pignolian?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, it's the first time I've seen you or met you. And all I can say is, this is my 13th hearing, and talking about this crime that I committed several years ago, there's something I shouldn't have never done, and there's something that I wish I'd never done, and I have no explanation, no excuses for what I've done. I know that it's something that it was something that I did that was very, very, very horrific to the family. And by doing what I did, I caused a lot of trauma to the family. Like you noted earlier, that their family suffered for trauma, and I know that I put them through that. I put them through that. I wish that I could take that knife back, and I can never take that knife back. I shouldn't have been doing what I was doing. I shouldn't have been running the streets. There's a lot of things that I shouldn't have been doing. And I regret all the things I did in life. And I regret that night. But I can't take it back. I wish I could, I just want to, like I said, this is my 13th hearing. And it seems like I haven't really got anywhere with the family. I want to be at peace with the family. I want to be at peace and seek forgiveness with that family, because I know what I did to them. And I changed their whole life that night, because literally I changed Mr. Logan's life. He was able to work again and conduct his life as a man, because I took that from him. And I know that I can't change that night. And I know that I've changed that man's life forever that night. I know the year that he was born. I know the year that his wife was born. But I know that night, I ended his life in a way that changed his life forever for what I did. I changed his whole family's life. I'm sorry for it. And I just want that family to finally forgive me, so I can be at peace with them. I just want to be at peace with that family. And I'm hoping that they forgive me one day. I'm here as a changed man. I'm not that person that committed that crime years ago. I know I'm not. I spent 27 years of my life. I've spent 27 years of my life in prison, and I never thought I would see the light at, light at the end of the tunnel. I never thought I would see light. But the light that I did find was for the Lord. A couple years ago, I found that light. So I'm living that light right now with the Lord. I know the Lord's here. I know the Lord's here with me now. And he's speaking to me and forgive me for being emotional, being very emotional, but I can't help it. I can't help my emotions. I'm sorry for that, And I can say, if I can show it in my heart and soul, they'll see that it's on fire. And it's been on fire for what I did. But, if I start getting some forgiveness from the family, maybe they start forgiving me, maybe we can be at peace with each other. It seems like every year we're not at peace.
Mr. Bernal, let me point out, I probably should have read the pre-sentence summary. I think it's a little more concise, and I certainly did not mean to not include this in the summary, but there was another officer that was shot in line of duty during this incident. So there were two officers that sustained life-threatening injuries, and probably a fair amount of emotional trauma in both the officers that were hurt. I don't understand where you were at that time in your life that you would shoot at two police officers. Explain to me who you were then.
I just got out of prison. I just got out of parole. You know, I wasn't in the right state of mind. I wasn't living right with myself. I wasn't taking care of my responsibilities with my daughter. My daughter's mother had just passed away, and I should have been more mature at that time, and I should have been more responsible as a man, having kids and having my ex-fiance pregnant at the time. And I wasn't living a righteous life, you know. I wasn't living a righteous life. And by being that, I've never been involved in a gang. But yet I grew up in that neighborhood. But I've never been part of a gang, or ran with a gang, or associated with a gang. But my life, growing up in that neighborhood, I lived in that neighborhood in the 70s and 80s, whatnot. But I wasn't living the right life, you know. I was cutting corners, and I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing as a man, as a human being, you know. And I wasn't living right. I wasn't taking care of my responsibilities with my family. And as for, you know, I know I went to trial, and I just wanted to be let them know I went to trial. And I never disputed being, I was a shooter. I know I was a shooter, and I know what I did. But I know what you said. I didn't know their officers, and, you know. There's no excuses for what I did. And, you know, like I said, I had a lot to drink that night. And there's still no excuses for what I did. Though I did what I did, I drank that night, and my, put it this way, I'm sure maybe one of you guys or the parole board had something to drink before, and your judgment's cloudy. Your mind's kind of cloudy of what your actions are doing. Though I can't make excuses for what I did. I didn't know who I was shooting at. I never knew who I was shooting at, like I said. I didn't know if it was a man or lady. I never knew that. I can honestly say that. And the Lord knows that I'm telling the truth. And I've been saying that my whole time that I've been coming to the parole board, that I never knew that. That they're officers. But it still doesn't change the fact of what I've done. It'll never change the fact of what I've done. You know, I respect law enforcement, and, you know, they're there to protect the community and serve my community. And they were there protecting my community, you know, and I committed a very violent act upon them, Mr. Logan and Marla Walter, you know. And like I said, these years and years that I've spent in prison, I know that I've done wrong. I know that I wronged that whole family. I put that family's whole life upside down. You know, I can honestly say that. I know what that family's pain has been, because I've been experiencing that pain. And let me explain to you just a little bit. You know, a couple years back when I was praying and seeking forgiveness with the Lord and seeking a lot of things that I had lost in my life, like my children, my family relationship, my visitation rights, everything was restored. I've been giving everything back, my family, my visitation. But the Lord took all that pain away from me. But 2 years ago, he instilled real pain in my heart. And now it's for the Logan family and Marla's family. Because he wanted me to experience your pain. They forgive me for being emotional, but I feel their pain. I know what I did. I can't change that night. But I just want them to forgive me. I want to be able to reconcile with that family. I want to be able to regrab with that family here on earth. So we can do it in heaven. I know that I did wrong. I know that I wronged that family. And I changed their life forever. I know that it changed their life forever. But I just want them to forgive me one day. So that I can move on with my life. And then, like I said, I'm here to seek peace. Because every year I come to the parole board, I'm not at peace. I don't feel at peace with them or the parole board. Because we don't get nowhere. It seems like we get in this bus to try to get somewhere, but the wheel just keeps spinning and spinning over and over again. And I know that others have come before me in front of this very parole board, and they get a chance at life. They get parole. Oh, you know, I'm not here to compare
myself. Mr. Cabral, let me interrupt you right now, with all due respect. We don't just look at one factor when considering parole or clemency, and I have to tell you, your behavior inside the Department of Corrections has not been very good. I think you have over 3 pages of discipline, and a major as recently as 2017.
Right. Oh, dirty UA, oh, dirty.
So, were you getting into drugs inside the prison system, Mr. Cabral?
Yes, I was. I became an addict here in prison.
And have you been able to clean up?
That. Yes, I have. I haven't had no ticket. I've been sober since that infraction. And like I said, I changed my life. You know, I've changed my life since that day. And I knew that. I wish I would have changed my life years ago. But I was sentenced to do 48 years as a young man. And I don't know not one inmate that's serving a 48 year sentence. That's going to start off, you know, I started my time in the instrument. You know, where it was just filled with violence, and you know, and it's still, I'm not proud of my past, I'm not proud of my record, I'm not proud of anything that I did in prison, at all. I'm ashamed of it. It's ugly. I know it is. I embarrass my family, I embarrass myself, and I can honestly say that. I wish I wouldn't have lived the way I did. And you know, there's no excuses for what I've done in life. There's no excuses for what I've done in prison. But I know that I'm not that man that committed that act. And I want to move on with my life. I want to try to, you know, I want to try to heal Mr. Logan's heart some way, somehow. I want to be able to find unity with that family. Find solace, peace with that family. Because I can't, I mean, I'm
going to
have
a
regardless.
Mr. Putnam, I do want to repeat yourself a little bit. I do want to ask you what I think is an important question. First of all, I'm not altogether sure if you did not know whether or not they were police officers, but why would you try to kill two people, period?
I can't explain it, sir. There's no justifications for my actions, and there's no reasons for my actions. And you know, like I said, I should have been doing what I was doing that night. You know, and I can't explain, and I can't speak for my co-defendant. I can only speak for myself. You know, we had got into an altercation that night, and he had gotten into an altercation that night. And you know, why I shot them officers, I can never explain that. I can't explain that, sir. I'll never be able to explain that. I'll never be able to justify that. And you asking me that, why would I purposely do that? I didn't purposely do that. Like I said, there's no excuses for what I done. And I know I keep telling you this, but I'm trying to find common ground and give you the best answer that I can give you. And well, the best answer that I can give you that there's no excuses for what I did that night. I'm sorry for what I did that night.
Okay, Mr. Bernardo.
And I would never truly in my life officer, and like I said, I was drinking that night, and my judgment was cloudy. I can't take that night back. But I can't explain my actions for that night. I can't. There's no excuses for what I've done that night.
Mr. Bernal,
I'm not that person.
Hold on.
I'm not that
Mr.
person.
Mr. Bernal, let me speak. Let me speak. I suppose everyone's different, but there's a lot of drinking that happens in this society, and I think the great majority of it does not end in trying to kill two people, let alone two police officers. So, I don't think that's an excuse, but how much had you been drinking that night?
I hadn't been drinking since 6 o'clock that evening.
How much did you drink?
You know what, I drank, we bought like two 12 packs and another 6 pack, and I don't even remember. We just drank from 6 o'clock, the time I picked him up, my cousin, till that night.
Okay, Mr. Bernal, at this point, I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you so that we can move the hearing along. Thank you. Yes, the Honorable Ms. Gilbert Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. Mr. Bernal, you indicated that you were not in a gang, you were not involved in a gang, but I'm curious why you would feel it necessary to have a gun with you. I mean, average citizens don't just walk around with a gun if they're not involved in something. And especially the fact that you were a prohibited possessor of a gun. Why did you have a gun?
There was no reason why I should have had the gun, ma'am. Put it this way. Months before that, my house was shot. My house was shot. You know, like I said, you want to ask me that? There's no reason why I had it. There should have been no reason why I had a gun. I was living the wrong type of life. I should have been not possessing no gun. I should have never had a gun. And I can't explain why I had a gun. You know, I wasn't, you know, there's no reasons for my actions. And while I had a gun, it's because I was living the wrong life. I chose to live the wrong life and not possess a gun.
Okay.
You know, I don't know why. I don't know. I shouldn't have had that gun.
Thank you, Mr. Bernal. The
Honorable
Mr. David.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. Mr. Bernal, October 1991, the board granted you what you asked from the previous sentence that you were serving. And I don't know exactly how fast after that you got out, physically out of prison. But I'm assuming it was probably closer to the 1st of November. So you were only out of jail 9 to 10 months when this happened. Had you completed your sentence, or were you still on home arrest?
No, I was off parole.
Okay, well.
When I went to trial, my parole officer went to my trial and
a simple answer, sir. A simple answer. You were not on home arrest at the time. You had finished that, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Very easy answer there. So then, of course, as Ms. Rittenhouse made mention of, you were a prohibited possessor. So you shouldn't have had the gun anyway. Your statement said you bought it just shortly before that. But it says that you had a 5-shot revolver. Now, it was either a very lesser known brand, or it was a small, short-barreled gun. You fired at least 4 rounds, and had those, you know, if you fired all 5 of them, you hit 2 different people 2 times each. Now, I've been shooting guns since I was probably 8 years old, and I spent a career in law enforcement, and I've seen a lot of things in my life. But I've never seen anybody that was so drunk they couldn't remember what happened that could shoot a little short-barreled revolver that accurately. So I just find it really hard to believe that you were as intoxicated as you claim at the time this happened. And I still can't, any way, shape, or form, get my mind around why a car would stop and two people would start getting out and you'd start shooting at them as soon as the door is open. It just makes absolutely no sense to me. So, you know, I guess that's not really a question, it's more of a statement. But we'll get back down to one other thing. Your behavior inside of prison in the last 5 years, that goes back to 2014, you've had 8 tickets, and 7 of those were majors. And one of them was very shortly before your first parole hearing. That's another thing I don't understand. You had to know that you were coming up on parole, and yet you couldn't behave yourself during that last couple of years. That just shows, to me, it shows a total lack of control, and that really, really concerned me about the idea of getting you any closer to returning to society. Can you explain why you've been misbehaved so much in the last 5 years?
You know, you use a self-control term. I understand that. I've taken a lot of programs with Thinking for a Change and Design for Living, and I'm not proud of my past. Like I said, I became an addict, and it seems like what I was doing in drugs, everything else wasn't doing right.
Well, we know you weren't doing it, sir. We know you weren't doing right, and admitting to it is fine and good and part of the process, but my question was why? Not really good, but it's just why were you acting like that?
You know, like I said,
when
drugs got a hold of your life, or it has a hold of my life.
Well, you said that you have been clean since you had that infraction and you were deposited your way. Okay, that was in December of 2017. In January of 2018, which was not too long before your first president, you got a major for disobeying. Now, I know that sometimes you disobey and you can end up with an informal resolution. Or you can have it as a minor, or you can have it as a major. And if they listed as a major, it's a fairly serious situation. And that was less than a year before your first president. Why would you be acting like that? Now your statement is, you just made indicates that you were still on drugs because you claimed that the drugs had hold of you, that's why you couldn't behave. But on the other side, you said that you haven't had any drugs since that ticket.
I've been clean since 2017.
Okay.
And I can answer that. That day I got that ticket, I was in isolation because they didn't want me to be in house with my brother. I was in right here in this yard above me at one able, my brother was in 1 able 9, I was in 1 sorry 6. They rolled me up one day because they don't want brothers on the same yard again. Okay, I don't know if you guys know that, but they don't allow brothers to be on the same yard. So they rolled me up that night and they pulled me in isolation. A little before that, they gave me the same ticket for refusal, disobeying a direct order. But the thing was that I was in isolation. They dismissed that ticket the first time. They wrote me up for the same thing twice. That very same ticket.
Okay, but what?
For disobeying direct orders. The captain dismissed it originally. They dismissed that ticket. It was the same. I got the ticket twice.
Okay.
And I was in isolation. Sir. They rolled me up.
Okay, but sir, then if the captain dismissed it the first time, somebody higher up in the hierarchy would have had a reissue it, and which means that somebody thought it was a little bit more serious. So anyway, that's enough. I have no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Dr. Ray.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Gervais. Let's go back to the original offense, the missing offense. Now, I think you stated, and correct me if you did not state, I believe you stated that you were not aware of the fact that the victims were police officers. Is that correct, sir?
I never knew they were officers, sir. That's correct.
You did not look around and see that they had on a uniform, that they identified themselves as officers, sir?
It was in the middle of the night. And the lights of the car were in my eyes. I didn't know who was in that vehicle. That's how that car came up to me. I mean, the car came up.
I know you, sir, I didn't interrupt you, but I know you stated several times already but you did not know that they were police officers. You had no idea who they were. You were not a member of a gang. So why did you get out shooting? Well, I mean, that's illogical to almost anyone. I mean, if I just driving up at midnight and I'm just gonna get out and just start shooting, I don't know who I'm shooting at. What had they done to you, or what you thought that they had done to you, sir?
Well, they shot me in the head. That's your name, sir? Is it Mr. Wright?
Yes, sir.
You know, and I've spoken to you, and we've spoken about this crime several years, and you ask me this question over and over and over every year.
I'm trying to get you to concentrate on this, sir.
Oh, I can concentrate, sir. I'm concentrating. There's nothing wrong with my concentration right now. And like I said, I can't justify the reasons why I did that. I can't explain why I did that. There's no reason why I should have done that. I was not
even
the right way.
Okay, so let me move forward, sir, to a more recent, current, rather. What have you done since last year that would justify this board ruling, justify me, not the board, but justify me voting to move you to your next consecutive sentence? What has happened? You before this board last year, just a little more than a year ago. So what have you done since then that would make you convince me that you're a different person than you were last year this time, sir?
Well, sir, I can tell you that I've been sober since that last ticket. I've been working. I'm working now. I've got a job. I get up every morning at 2:00 and I work. I work in the kitchen for 10 hours a day. You know, I'm not that person that committed that crime that night. I'm not that person that crime that night.
I'm not suggesting that you were. That's what I'm trying to ask. What have you done? I mean, I need to see some progress, and I'm just trying to get you to tell me what progress you made, sir, that want me to vote to move you to the next consecutive sentence, sir. That's all I'm trying to get you to.
I understand that, sir. And I'm working every day, and I'm working on my life. There's no programs in prison for us to take any programs right now at the buggy unit. There's really no programs to take. So I work every day, and, you know, I work every day, and I read the Bible every day. You know, I've changed my life for the better, you know, and I'm seeking the Lord, and I got a relationship with the Lord.
Okay, now you also stated, sir, this is a quote, and I just want you to tell me what it means to you. This is a quote from you, that you want to move on with your life, or with my life, is the quote. So what do you want to do to move on with your life, sir?
I would like to move on with my life and accepting responsibility for what I did, and then seeking peace with the victims and forgiveness for the victims. That's what I want most in life right now. In my life, what I want is forgiveness and find peace with that county. That's what I want. Most of all, sir, you asking me that. That's what I want. That's what I want. And I want to move on with my life by being able to reconcile with that county and make right with that county. Me sitting in prison every year, I would want to move on with my life by trying to make right with Mr. Logan and Marla. I want to make right with that family that I've wronged. You know, I'm seeking forgiveness with that family. I'm seeking peace with that family.
Let me just ask you one other question, Mr. Rennell, and this will be my final question for time management. If this board were to move you to your next consecutive sentence, what would that mean to you? Not to no one else, but what would that mean to you, sir?
It would
mean
a lot to me, sir, even though I spent 27 years and the sentence will be over next year. And I'll move on with my next sentence, regardless, next year, sir.
I know, but what's going to mean to you to move on to your next consecutive sentence? Why do you want to move to your next consecutive sentence, sir?
I said I'll move on with my life to get, and I want to move on with my next sentence so I can start off in the right foot, and hopefully learning from my mistakes, you know, and like I said, I understand that I was never allowed, you know, and I don't want to bring it up, but I was never allowed to use my ERC that I've earned. I've earned 6.5 years good time, but I was never allowed to utilize it in this sentence because I'm doing a flat sentence. I've been denied every year to move on to my next sentence, even though I earned 6.5 years good time. I've earned 6.5 years good time, and I've still not been able to utilize that good time and move on to my next sentence because under the ARS 1305, I'm probably being to do a flat sentence, and it's up to the discretion of the parole board whether they parole me or not. So it seems like I've been doing a flat sentence this whole time, whether I've earned good time. I've earned a lot of good time, but I was never allowed to utilize that good time, sir. You know what I'm talking about with the ERCs that I've earned reading credit. I was never allowed to utilize any of that good time to move on to my next sentence ever.
I'm not mad about it, sir.
I respect you guys.
Yes, sir. And we respect you, sir, but I don't think that you really lived such a good life since you've been, since a year and a half ago, I guess, in 17. You say you haven't done anything since then, but, you've always been living all kind of problems in the corrections system. And a year and a half, that's not that long. So, but thank you so very much, sir. And thank you so very much, Honorable Mr. Columbus, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Mr. Bernal, a quick follow-up question. And hopefully you'll be able to answer this concisely. But you tried to kill two police officers. In my opinion, police officers represent the community. Why should the community forgive you? You're seeking forgiveness, but why should they? Consider your behavior since you've been inside the prison system. What have you done to earn forgiveness?
For one, I paid my debt to society. And in the last, 27 years,
let me stop you right there. The courts didn't say that was your debt to society. They said a 28-year sentence and a 20-year sentence. So you're saying that you feel that your debt's been paid, that the books are clear.
No, I did not say that, sir. I did not say that. You said that, sir. The books are not clear. And they're never going to be clear, And I stumble with my words and what I'm trying to get at. I know what you guys are asking me, and I know what you meant by their law enforcement. And I can't take that knife back. But that's not me that who committed that crime, even though I committed that crime. I can't take that knife back. I wish I could. But, I understand the words that you're asking me. But the way you ended, I intentionally, maliciously wanted to hurt them. I was in the right place. I was in the right state of mind here. There's no excuses for what I done. And I say that over and over. And there's, I can't make right with that. I'll never be able to make right with that for what I've done. But I'm just hoping that I get forgiveness from that family so I can find some forgiveness with them and peace and solitude with them. That's all I'm seeking. Whether I get paroled or not, and whether I get out or not. I just want to be at peace with that family and forgiveness with that family. So I hope you can understand that. What I just said.
Okay, Mr. Bernal, now it's probably a pretty good time to allow your supporters to speak before the board. So I'm going to stop right here and ask if either of your supporters would like to speak. Yes, thank you. You state your name for the record, ma'am.
Yes, my name is Juanita Chacon.
And what would you like to share before?
Just a quick letter.
Thank you.
Good morning. Can I just say that my name is Juanita Chacon and I'm the daughter of Jamie Bernal. I've been aware of my father appearing in front of y'all in the past and pleading for his release. Here I stand before you asking on my behalf for his release. First and foremost, I'd like to take a moment to apologize to the victims of my father's crime. I can't begin to imagine the challenges that Officer Logan's family will be faced with that tragic night, after that tragic night. A piece of y'all live in me each and every day as it weighs heavy on my heart to know that my father is responsible for such a crime. I have the utmost respect for our law enforcement and thank them for their service. So brave are they to put their lives on the line each and every day when they walk out their doors and kiss their families goodbye, not knowing if it will be the last. That night in July many years ago changed many lives, including mine. I'm 30 years old and have very few memories of my father. Missed out on father-daughter dances, music recitals, sporting events, and much more father-daughter activities. I understand 100% that he, my father, Jamie, is the reason. He's the reason he brought him his imprisonment upon himself and for making the choices he did that night. Just a few years ago is when my father told me what happened, and he takes full responsibility for his actions to this day. I've struggled during my childhood and young adult life to forgive him for taking that father figure every girl needs away. Through countless letters and visits, my father has more than confessed and apologized to me for his actions that took him away from me. And I ask you all that you take my presence and my thoughts from the heart into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Just one second. Any questions from the board? Ma'am, thank you for appearing for the board today.
Thanks.
And I thought that was a very dignified statement. Do we have any other individuals that will be speaking to the board? Ma'am, if you could state your name for the record.
Good morning. My name is Adela Bernal. I'm the mother of Jamie Bernal. And I just ask you now, I apologize for my son for everything he's done. And I know he's been in there for a while now. I haven't seen him in 6 years. Been able to visit him. But all I ask is for the parole to at least parole him to his next number. I know he's done wrong in life, but I was the only parent, a single parent, with my children, and my brother, I'm talking on behalf of my brother also. He's a pastor for the church, and he opened a halfway house in surprise of his own now. He has a couple of Department of Corrections inmates there already. He's got a spot for my son. He's got a job waiting for him. He has, I guess, like 15 or 20 beds for the inmates that can get out of Department of Corrections. He's got a couple of them there already. All I ask is that I apologize to Ms. Rosser and Logan for what my son has done to them and their family. I know it's hard. My son was young. He was young and didn't realize what he was getting into. And it actually happened on my birthday when all this happened. I'm not a drinker, I'm not a drug dealer, I'm not. All I ask is that the parole be considered for my son to at least parole to the next number. And with God's consideration, Lord, I know he's become a good man in there, and he does work hard. And his daughter is getting married in October. And I wish he would be out here for this event, but Lord, I know it's not. But all I ask is for you guys to consider my son to the next number. In the 5 years, he had a good time. I don't know what went on with that, but all I ask is for his forgiveness and the wrong that he's done to the police officers that hurt me so much to see him in that pain. Officer Logan and Officer, because I know what police are there to do, they're to protect us from any wrong. And but I know he's changed his life. He'll be a better man. will become a bad melody if he ever gets out. That's all I can say.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you for appearing for the board. Are there any questions from my colleagues? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
At this point, I will turn it over to our new prosecutor.
Yes.
To our representative from the Maryville County Attorney's Office.
Yes.
And if you would like to establish some sort of order as to what's to speak.
Yes, please. So, good morning. My name is Desiree Kerfoot, and I am representative from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. On the victim's side today, we have Assistant Chief of Police from Phoenix Police Department, John Collins, Franklin Marino from the Phoenix Law Enforcement Association. We have Marla Wasser and her family present as well as Alex Palacios, who's going to read a letter on behalf of David Logan. So I'll let them go ahead and start, and then I will finish up
with
any comments.
Mr. Palacios. Oh, pardon me. Chief Collins. Good morning, sir. Can you state your name for the record?
Good morning. My name is John Collins. I'm Assistant Chief of the Phoenix Police Department.
And what would you like to share with the board this morning, sir?
On July 30th, 1992, two Phoenix police officers were shot. Actions do have consequences. The Phoenix Police Department opposes any type of verbal release and requests that inmate Bernal serve his entire 48-year sentence. Nothing further.
Thank you, Chief. Any questions from the fellow board members? Thank you, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Thank you for allowing me to speak before you today. My name is Franklin Marino. I'm a 24-year veteran of the Phoenix Police Department. I'm an active peace officer, and I currently serve as the secretary of the Phoenix Law Enforcement Association, PLEA, certified bargaining unit that represents rank-and-file Phoenix police officers like Officer Logan. Once again, I'm here before you to speak out against the release of Mr. Bernal. I've actually been doing this since about 2012, and I hear the same old story over and over again from Mr. Bernal. July 30th will mark 27 years since Mr. Bernal destroyed the life of Officer Logan when he shot him. Officer Logan survived his injuries, but was forced to medically retire in 1998 from a career he enjoyed and was dedicated to. As the years have gone by, his health has steadily deteriorated and declined. He's actually to the point where he is unable to appear. And I have a letter from Officer Logan, which I'd like to read when I'm through with my statement, if that's okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you. So, although incarcerated, Mr. Bernal still enjoys things that he took away from Officer Dave Logan. Mr. Bernal has his health. He has the ability to walk around and move around on his own. He has the ability to take care of himself. Officer Logan, who was once a DARE instructor, was a leader and mentor to his students in the community he served. And as a father and husband, he was the pillar of strength for his family. His injuries have taken such a toll on him personally and financially, the family was finally forced to sell their home, and he had to move into an assisted care facility. Mr. Bernal imposed the following sentence on Officer Logan when he shot him. Obviously, his loss of his physical health, diminished mental health, loss of mobility, loss of his dignity, loss of any independence that Mr. Bernal still enjoys, even though he's incarcerated. He lost the home where he raised his family. And now he has to rely on others to take care of his most basic needs. Based on the severity of the crime committed against Officer Logan, I respectfully request his petition for parole be denied and he serve the full term of this sentence.
Thank you, sir. And did you have something else?
Yes, I had a letter from Officer Logan.
Thanks,
which I'd like to read instead of Mr. Palacios. To the board, my name is David Logan. I am a medically retired Phoenix police officer. I love my job. On July 31st, 1992, the suspect, Jaime Bernal, ran up from behind me at 1:10 a.m. as I was exiting my car. My patrol partner, Marlon Wasser, and I observed two men walking down 9th Street, one with a rifle. The suspect ran up to the car from a hiding position and without us seeing him coming and shot me point-blank in the back of the neck, then shot Marla through the windshield coming around the driver's door. Standing so close, My left splatter from shooting me in the throat was on his shoes. Bernal then continued coming around a police car to execute my partner. He shot me twice and my partner twice. After his arrest, we were told it was a contract for a hit on us. If Bernal ever gets released, it may put me and my family in extreme danger. Please help us to stay safe and at peace, knowing he is still incarcerated. My life since the shooting has been one of constant and severe pain due to one of his bullets hitting me in the spine and crushing my spinal cord, causing a loss of the use of the entire left side of my body. Needless to say, my life is a prison with no chance of parole. My parole will come when I pass away. My fate was chosen by Bernal. Bernal, who was given a defense attorney, a judge to guarantee his rights, and a jury of 12 people who were there to determine that he committed the crime they found was guilty. On the other hand, Bernal took it upon himself to choose our fate by shooting two police officers several times who were in uniforms with large yellow letters that said police on the front with our badges, claiming he thought we were just two citizens in a police car driving by and stopping there. I will never be released from my prison of pain, flashbacks, inability to do things as a husband, to help my wife who now has severe heart problems, who has to serve as my caregiver or helper for the rest of our lives. I strongly oppose Bernal's request, for an attempted murder is a grievous crime for two people. For there is no reason that his early release from my sentence is not reasonable for what I am going through due to his actions. When he said I'm sorry, this does not heal me or my family. Please also consider the victims in this heinous crime. Thank you, and I'm very sorry I don't have the physical ability to be there. Sincerely, Dave Logan, retired Phoenix police officer.
Thank you, sir. Any questions from the board members?
Thank you.
Thank you for appearing before the board, sir.
You're welcome, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you say your name, ma'am?
Samantha Wasser.
Good morning, ma'am.
Sorry. I think it's important because it hasn't been said this time. The last few times that we've had our parole hearing, Mr. Bernal has explained the crime that occurred. He continues to say that he did not know we were police officers. Him and his cousin had gone to a street up above on Taylor, done a home invasion of some type, where a elderly woman was pistol whipped. I don't know who did the pistol whipping. Mr. Bernal will tell you that he was never convicted of that crime, but he wasn't there. His cousin was convicted of that crime. They were on their way back down 9th Street. Their car was parked on the corner of 9th Street and Polk. When we drove past him, we thought they were out after curfew. At 1:30 in the morning in that neighborhood, they are usually up to no good. We turned down Polk, made a U-turn. We were in a white four-door Lumina, which is a common car that we used undercover with the gang squad, so they knew very well that that was a car. Officer Logan was 48 years old. There's street lights there. They were building the Preparatory Academy at 7th Street and Van Buren at that time. It was a nice night out. There's no way that he could not have noticed who or what we were as we drove past him. We had those little antennas on the trunks of our car, as well as a female, 38-year-old female on the other side. If nothing else, we went down Polk, we made our U-turn, we came back, saw that him and his cousin were walking across the front yard of the house that was there to reach their vehicle. We pulled in so we could illuminate them. And before we could basically even get out of our car, he ran up on Officer Logan and shot him at point-blank range. He shot me in the hand and in my right thigh. Not only if he had left from the driver's side, I could not have told you who he was. I could not have described his description other than the clothes that he was wearing because I never saw his face, until he decided to come around the back of our car and stood on the passenger side where I was, from my passenger door to the trunk of the car. And he took another shot at me, and fortunately he missed. and we had a 5-shot revolver. I had a 6-shot revolver, and I continued to shoot, and he ran, and he ran out of bullets, and I did manage to shoot him in the shoulder. He had enough good sense not even to go to his car to try to get away, but ran to whatever area that his cousin ran towards and buried himself in a dumpster to keep from being caught. If it wasn't for one of our canines finding him, we would not. And thank God he did not have any spare bullets. His cousin had the bullets to his gun. Otherwise, we would have had other officers who walked past that alley and looked into dumpsters who may have been shot themselves. I don't believe him when he says he had no idea that we were police officers. I have more respect for him if he would just admit to the fact that he thought we knew what he had done with his cousin up north, and he didn't want to go back to prison. We've heard that. I was trained in that when I was at the academy, that some people will do anything to keep them going back to prison, including trying to kill a police officer. I don't believe when he says that he did not know we were. He intentionally went around the back of that car. He could have left from the driver's side, and that would have been the end of it. The most I would have been able to do is get on the radio and say, this is what happened, and they would start looking for him. That's the best. You don't come around the back of a car to try and execute somebody. We had gray shirts on with big 4-inch yellow letters across the front of us that said police, across the back of us that said police. There's no way that he could not have known. And if he was that drunk, there was no way he could have driven to what he had to go do. As far as forgiveness, I don't care about me. Officer Logan is forever changed. I just talked to him last night. He wanted to be here, and he would have come, but he has a doctor's appointment in the afternoon, and he cannot leave his home twice in one day because it totally, physically and emotionally wipes him out. He's 74 years old right now. Longevity runs in his family. The doctors had told him because of the injuries that he has, chronologically he may be 74, but his body is more like 84 to 90 years of age. He cannot regulate his temperature correctly. If he gets sick, he's not sure if he's sick. So he's constantly having to go to the doctor, constantly has to have blood tests. The one thing that he wanted to do when he retired was to be able to travel with his wife and go places and see things that he's always read about. He is a smart man. He still has all his faculties, but he's still afraid to go out and go to certain places because he doesn't know, and he doesn't know how to be able to protect his wife if anything were to happen. That's how he feels. The one time that he did try to do a vacation with his wife and went on a cruise with his daughter and her husband, he did not know. He has to go get blood work done before he can go anywhere to make sure there's not an infection in his body somewhere, because he cannot necessarily feel that he is sick. The side that actually works has no feeling. The side that doesn't work very well is nothing like short of being on pins and needles 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I know Mr. Bernal would like to have forgiveness. I did not ever see that happening from Officer Logan. As for me, he has to earn that. And he has to earn that by telling the truth of what's actually going on. And I don't see him ever doing that. I've heard the same thing over and over and over. If he cannot tell you why he shot a man and a woman, even if we were nothing more than a married couple coming home to our own house on the corner where he parked their car, he cannot explain why he decided to just shoot us. What was an old married couple going to do? Were we going to stop him? Is he in our front yard? We don't know. So why? I do not feel that he has a right to justice for day by letting him have any time off his sentence whatsoever. I will reconsider when he starts serving my sentence and he can start asking for a parole, because I'll probably be dead by the time he's entitled to have a parole hearing. this has affected many people, his family as well. And I have used this story on more than one occasion when I taught DARE and gang-related education when I was at the schools, to let them know that their actions have consequences, not only for the people involved, but for the family. And his daughter was always on my mind, because I knew he had a three-year-old daughter when he did this crime. And I told my students, he will never see her go to her first day of school. No daughter did. Not being able to walk her down the aisle when she got married. Not being there when her first child was born. Not being there when she retired from her work. Wouldn't be there for his mother's funeral when the day comes. He also has a son, same thing with him. It's a powerful lesson for young people who want to get involved in criminal activity. But I also told them that those consequences, if you do A, B is going to happen, and B can be good or it can be bad, and the choice is up to you. You want to commit a crime, there's a possibility you could die, whether it's a beer run, shoplifting, a robbery, whatever the case may be. There's always that possibility. So for that, Mr. Brunel, I thank you, because you gave a valuable lesson to a group of young people many times over. But I strongly oppose, and it's not because I want revenge. I want justice for Dave. When my sentence comes up, I may have a different feeling. But right now, I don't. He had a pre-sentencing investigation report done a couple years ago. And the one thing that struck me, that just bothered the hell out of me, was that his attorney was trying to sit there and say that it was a youthful indiscretion. He was 22 years old. I had been married a year when I was 22. I didn't have children, but he did. This is not a youthful indiscretion. He was an adult, and he needs to take his punishment like an adult. Happy to hear that he is doing better in prison, but there's no excuse to have all of these disciplinary actions while he's been in prison. I'm sorry. You should have learned something from all of that. And I realize prison is not easy. Not when you have other inmates that want to go after you. Not when you have to fight for your life. I understand that. And I wish they had programs for them. And I wish he did an education. And I wish he would continue to go on so that when he does get out, that he will be able to provide for himself and be a productive member of our society. I don't see that happening. The lawyer had said that he'd be 60 years old by the time he gets out and no more inclined to do violence anymore. And I thought, really? I'm 16 years old. Actually, I'm 64 now, but at that time, I was 60 years old. And if you don't think that I could commit a violent act, I'm here to tell you, come into my house and you'll see how violent my act can get. I will protect myself. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Ma'am, just one second. Any questions from fellow board members? No. Thank you so much. And if you can state your name for the record again. Thank you.
My name is Desiree Kerfoot, and I am with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. As you've all read from the letter, we are strongly in any opposition towards giving him any time off of his sentence. You've heard from the family, you've heard from the victims today. What he did was horrific. He gave Officer Logan a life sentence, essentially. And I believe that he should spend every single day of his sentence incarcerated and not receive any time off for this. He's not paid his debt to society like he says he has. He claims he's not going to make excuses, but he spent 20, 30 minutes making excuses about how he was drinking. He didn't know they were officers.
I think that he hasn't learned his lesson yet and that he needs to spend this last year of his original sentence before he moves on to his next sentence because of the horrific act that he committed. This isn't only affecting the victims and their families, but this does affect society, as was mentioned before. This affects everyone, and I think for that reason, he doesn't deserve to get any time off of his sentence. So we oppose any sort of modification. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions? Okay, thank you. I want to make sure before we give Mr. Bernal an opportunity to give a final statement, is there anybody else from on the Victims Representatives Department that wants to put forward? Okay. Mr. Bernal, we're getting close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us. But this is your hearing, so is there anything else that you feel is important for us to know or understand before we go into discussion? And we do ask that you keep your final statement concise. You can speak, but if you can, just say what you need to say. Thank you, sir.
I just want to let Marlo know that I am sorry for what I've done, and I'll always be sorry for what I've done.
Sir, it's important that you just address the board. Thank you, sir.
I thank you guys for this time, and I would want to say this. Mr. Whitmore was paroled last year and he had 50 some disciplinary tickets. And I just want to know if other inmates can receive a chance at parole after they receive 50 tickets, 60 tickets, you know, they're getting a chance at parole, you know, and I'm not comparing their crime to my crime, but...
Well, Mr. Cavell, I'm going to cut you off right there. Then don't compare your crime to their crime. Because everyone's an individual.
Yeah, everybody's an individual, sir. And I'm always just hoping that one of these days I get a chance, that they get a chance. They get a chance every year at parole. You know, when they're you know what I'm talking about, sir. You know, these other individuals get a chance. And they're murderers, rapists, molesters, and all the likes. And this very parole board has given them a chance. You know, I just hope that one day they give me a chance. That's all I have to say, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Bernard. The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like that we're speaking to you directly, but it is the board discussing the case amongst itself under the open meeting laws of Arizona. So if you'll just remain silent on the phone, listen in. We'll come back to you shortly with our decision. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The board is now in discussion. I'll try to keep it short, those board members, as far as opening up the deliberation. Considering Mr. Bernal's behavior in the Department of Corrections, all the way through to recently, the fact that he attempted to murder two police officers by gunfire, one of whom was virtually destroyed by his injuries, which I find is the highest affront to law and order, as well as public safety. As I stated earlier, I believe it's an attack on the representatives of the community. I do not find the superintendent for parole to his next consecutive sentence. Likewise, I believe, as one board member, that the courts were already lenient by sentencing Black prison terms with a firm ending, which is to say, he did not receive a life or natural life sentence. And that's where I'll begin the discussion. Thank you. Yes, the Honorable Ms. Gilbert.
Thank you, Mr. Canoes. I'm just troubled by the fact that Mr. Vidal can't give a reason for anything he did. And I'm not in favor of those people.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. David Neal.
Mr. Bernal continues to claim he had no idea they were police officers, which waiting an issue, and if I pulled up, he might not have, but when we ran up to Officer Logan, he was close enough to definitely see the forage letters on his ballistic vest that said police. And then we went around to the other side of the car where Officer Marshall had already landed. He could no doubt be able to see the orange letters that said police. And to have enough control when you're so drunk you can't remember what happened, to be able to walk up or run up and shoot the officer and then the other one from across the car, wouldn't have the ability to walk around the car, take another shot. And I just can't buy into the DNA and I get what's going on. And I don't, one of his lack of accountability and one of the things he complained about was that they didn't give him credit for his good behavior, but on flat sentence, you are entitled to a good time. So nobody deprived him of anything while he was in. The sentencing was what deprived him of that good time. So I'm not in favor of moving him forward to his next consecutive sentence at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Honorable Dr. Wright.
Thank you, sir. Since May 13, 2015, this would be the sixth time that he's appeared since I've been on the board. And on behalf of the citizens of Arizona, I see no reason to parole him to his next consecutive sentence or grant him absolute discharge. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Dr. Wright. Before I make a motion, I do want to point out, again, one of the board members, is my opinion, but it would seem that either he tried to senselessly murder two innocent citizens, or he tried to assassinate two police officers, and I'm disturbed by both scenarios. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion, and that is regarding Mr. Hunting Bernard, ADC number 077816. My motion is to deny parole to his next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge, and so make sure before I get ahead of myself. Okay, and based on the year of the crime, I'm asking for a 1 year set off, and that is my motion.
Second.
Agree.
Agree.
Seconded by the Honorable Mr. Neal, will be upon the Honorable Ms. Gilbert House and the Honorable Dr. Wright. Again, I ask for 1 year set off. Police type in 9 is 44B411, which is parole to his next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. Reasons for denial are as follows: serious and violent offense. I'd say serious and deviant offense based on the post-quarter nature of the event. Harm to the victim, serious bodily injury, multiple victims. I'm taking it on good faith, but it sounds like that there was victim harassment during the trial. Criminal history, violation of previous probation. History of continued substance abuse. Prior criminal history. Repeat offender. Poor institutional behavior. Recent disciplinary infractions. Are there any other reasons for denial that any of my colleagues wish to add? Okay, Mr. Bernal, the board has voted unanimously to deny parole to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. We ask for a 1 year set off and we stated our reasons for denial. Do you have any questions before we end this hearing?
You guys have a good day.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This will bring it right to a close, and I want to thank everyone for appearing before the board today. Thank you.